In many cases, death problems arise when the social contract is weak.
Welcome to this podcast produced by the International Monetary Fund. I'm Bruce Edwards. In this episode, how fixing sub-Saharan Africa's infrastructure gap could also help relieve some pressures from rising debt.
Convincing people that you will make good use of the money, you will invest it in the right types of infrastructure. And when people see that you have done so, the more willing they're able to pay taxes. So there's a virtuous cycle that can initiate for you. I'm Abdullah Amro Selassie. I'm the head of the Africa Department of the IMF.
Sub-Saharan Africa has made significant inroads in reducing poverty, increasing access to education and health services, but the infrastructure deficit still looms large throughout the region. Abebe Amro Selassie says for many countries, the ability to finance their development needs has become more constrained as public debt has increased rapidly in recent years. Selassie is the director of the IMF's African Department, which has organized a special conference in Dakar, Senegal, to discuss how countries can continue to address the infrastructure gap while maintaining manageable debt levels. So why has there been such a big infrastructure gap for so long in the region, and how much of that can be attributed to debt issues?
So I think it's important to step back and consider the level of development of many countries in sub-Saharan Africa, which, of course, relative to most other parts of the world, is considerably lower. So if you like, the initial conditions that these countries have is relatively less developed infrastructure. Now, countries have been investing quite a bit in infrastructure trying to address this, but population levels have been continued to go up. And the deficit has been so significant that, you know, they've only been making some inroads into this gap and, you know, have yet to completely address it.
So countries are having trouble keeping up with population growth?
No, I mean, what I want to say is, like, I mean, you know, so a couple of things. I mean, it depends on which dimension of infrastructure you're looking at. So if you look at something like access to telephones, with the help of technology, with the help of private investment that has engendered reforms governments have pursued, you now have almost universal access to telephones, which you didn't 20, 25 years ago. So there's been tremendous progress. When it comes to road infrastructure, urban transport and the like, there's been tremendous urbanization, influx of people from rural areas into urban areas, which is part of the development process, of course. So many of our cities are teeming and creaking because governments have not kept pace with this massive influx of population that you've seen. And a bigger force than population growth per se is the shift in population within countries that have been taking place. So I think population growth is impacting more the social infrastructure delivery. So delivery of schools, health, education, that's where that's putting pressure. But in terms of actual hard infrastructure, physical infrastructure, I think it's more the starting conditions, initial conditions are a big reason why the infrastructure gap remains large.
And infrastructure generally is the problem all over the world, and investment is difficult in many countries, in many regions. Is it more difficult, would you say, in Africa to find investors to invest in infrastructure projects?
To some degree, yes. In many advanced countries, many emerging market countries, you have institutional structures, institutional development that allow the private sector to come and invest and take risk, and whereas the institutional structures are not as well developed in many African countries. Beyond this, the resources that are needed to invest are also not there. So if you're Germany, you want to build an airport, you go out, borrow from markets, and you can give it to the contractor to do the infrastructure for you. If, on the other hand, you're Malawi, you need to build an airport, you know, often you already have a budget deficit. Access to capital markets is not easy. So you have to rely on loans from and ideally on concessional terms, because market borrowing can be expensive. You know, grant financing to be able to do that. So the lack of resources is also an additional factor why infrastructure gaps cannot be addressed as quickly as possible. If the private sector wants to come and were willing to come and do that, they would often ask for very high rates of returns because of the higher risk of doing business in this in these countries. Sometimes the perception of risk also, I mean, the actual risk is probably not as high, but perception of risk is also very high. Mm.
And so you just mentioned their debt. How much or to what extent is debt a hindrance to infrastructure development?
So debt in and of itself is not a bad thing. Debt becomes problematic if it's excessive. So if you borrow more than you can afford to service, then that will be, that's a huge burden, can create macroeconomic stress and even outright macroeconomic crisis. The other is if you borrow and use that debt for investments which do not have sufficiently high rates of returns or are used unwisely. I think these are the two main reasons why debt is so problematic. Debt in moderate amounts, I think, is a very important tool to help you finance much needed investment in infrastructure, in health, you know, building schools, universities. And it's a way of being able to smooth investment over time, smooth consumption over time. And it really is an important way in which countries have developed over time. Some countries have gotten into trouble by having borrowed too much in the region. For obvious reasons, when debt is excessive, the burden of payment, the payment burden becomes excessive. So it moves resources away from much needed investment in other things or even current spending to servicing the debt. It becomes untenable and you have to, of course, find ways to address that. But, in moderate amounts, I think debt is an important part of the way in which the infrastructure gap will be addressed.
Mm. And so how do you measure the success of these sometimes huge infrastructure projects?
So I think narrowly, I mean, one way to measure is whether an investment that you've made in, say, a road project is generating enough revenues so that you're able to service the debt. So that's a very narrow way of measuring or gauging how successful an infrastructure project is. So there's no road. You come, you build a road, you put a toll on it, ideally. Mm-hmm. So people that use that road are paying for it and you're servicing the debt. So in a way, kind of you can assess that project in that narrow sense. But there's a broader way in which, a broader picture to this, which is sometimes, the creation of the road opens up part of the country where development had not been possible in the first instance, or you're unable to do a toll on it because, basically people cannot afford. I mean, you need it for the, to develop the region. So in cases like that where you build the road, so as a result, farmers, for example, are now going to be able to get a higher farm gate price for their products because you've reduced the indirect cost, you've reduced the burden on them of being able to get these goods to the market. So, people are better off. Maybe they'll be able to send their kids to school, get medical treatment for them when the kids fall ill. So there is this other broader part of development that the building of infrastructure can engender, and you're not quickly able to capture all of this rate of return in your tax revenues the way you would if you were able to toll the road. So in many ways, the existential question around development is, how governments can best capture the rate of return on the investments that they make. That's very much at the heart of a successful development. So, convincing people that you will make good use of the money, you will invest it in the right types of infrastructure. And when people see that you have done so, the more willing they're able to pay taxes. That strengthens the social contract between government and people. The more they're able to pay taxes, the more you're able to collect revenues, of course, the more you're able to service the debt that you've taken out to do this investment. So there's a virtuous cycle that can initiate for you. So in many cases, debt problems arise when the social contract is weak, and that can be for various political economy reasons, or governments are unwilling to contemplate measures to capture the rate of return on all of the investments that they've made. So when we talk about the importance of domestic revenue mobilization in the context of fund programs, in the
which is tax collection.
Which is tax collection. This is very much what we're at the heart of what we're getting at. Over the last 15, 20 years in sub-Saharan Africa, there's been a tremendous amount of investment in infrastructure, in health, in education. So when you outcomes in all of these dimensions have improved considerably. By no means are these outcomes perfect, and Lord knows much more remains to be done by way of investment still and improving living conditions. But there has been significant investment. Where there hasn't been as good progress is in capturing the rate of return on all of these investments. Mm. So governments haven't gone out and convinced people on the need to pay more taxes to be able to service the debt. So some of the debt pressures that have arisen in the last few years really revolve around governments now facing higher interest payments relative to the tax revenues that they've been collecting. So an important part of the policy agenda going forward for many countries is to do a better job at capturing the rate of return on all the investments that they've made over the last 10, 15 years.
And how do they do that?
So fundamentally, we see in the region a lot of potential to do more revenue mobilization. So on average, we estimate between 3 and 5 percentage points of GDP potential in tax to GDP ratios. I don't want to make it sound very easy because going out getting taxes from people is always a very difficult thing. Yeah. But I think a manageable objective for countries really is for countries to target between 0.5 and 1 percentage point of GDP in revenue mobilization each year. So these kind of modest increases each year over a 4 or 5 year period can accumulate into a substantial increase in revenue in fiscal space that governments can use to continue to address infrastructure needs, to continue to address development spending needs in other areas, while also making sure that debt doesn't get out of hand and can even continue to be brought down.
And what do you think is the role of international financial institutions to help countries through this process?
So, the mandates, the expertise that resides in international financial institutions varies quite a bit, of course. In the case of the IMF, for example, we work with countries in many different ways. So first and foremost, of course, our policy advice is very much geared towards helping countries strike the right balance, the healthy balance between continuing to address their development objectives and avoiding debt sustainability problems. So that's at the heart of a lot of what we do in terms of our engagement with the membership in sub-Saharan Africa, but also much the rest of the world. Second, we provide quite a lot of advice in areas very much germane to helping strike this balance. So we, of course, provide a lot of capacity development, technical assistance type support to countries in how to optimize your tax revenue authorities that will help you collect taxes. Just to give you an example, an increasingly important challenge that many countries are facing is base erosion and profit shifting by multinational companies. So what is the latest approaches to minimizing transfer pricing, thin capitalization, and other tax optimization measures that companies are taking? So we give advice on that, for example. Mm-hmm. So making sure that the financial sector is stable and financial sector development can help you do debt management more effectively. You're able to issue longer tenure debt to be able to address some of your financing needs. So financial sector development is another area where we do some work, where the World Bank does some work. So international financial institutions help both directly by providing some financing to help address the deficits countries face from time to time, development needs that they have, but also in providing policy advice to help put in place lasting, durable solutions to some of the development challenges countries face.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That was Abebe Amro Selassie, Director of the IMF's African Department. You'll find the department's latest research on sustainable development and sustainable debt at imf.org. If you like this podcast, look for us on Spotify or your favorite podcast app. Just search for IMF Podcasts. You can also follow us on Twitter at IMF_podcast. Thanks for listening.